Hello, and welcome to a roundtable discussion on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, I'm joined by guests for a lively conversation on a topic we hope you'll find interesting. The numbers we're going to be talking about in this episode are the 2017 to 2018 TV season ratings. Joining me, as always, for these episodes is Sam. How you doing tonight, Sam?
Good. How are you doing, John?
I'm doing great. I love these episodes because not only do I like to watch TV and am curious how these things are doing, you do all the number crunching on these spreadsheets. I love that. It's so much easier for me.
Isn't it?
It is. It's funny because I was actually going through the spreadsheet today during my lunch hour and was looking at it and highlighting a lot of the shows I've been watching, and I noticed a general trend for them. For the most part, not universally, they were not on the upper end of the spectrum in terms of how the general populace is liking shows. I guess my tastes are a little out of alignment with some.
Boy, that is a Let's start with some basics before, you know, kind of people freak out. In
sure.
General, ratings are down, and we've talked about this plenty, since the advent of cable television in the early 80s,
mm-hmm.
Ratings on broadcast television go down year over year, somewhere in the neighborhood of 7% plus or minus 4 or 5%, depending on the particular year. It is not unusual for ratings to decline. As the numbers tend to show, people are not watching less television. There's just time shifting, and you're dividing by more and more channels. So again, that channel number 800 that's got 200 people watching, that you think no one watches that, well, yes, it's true, no one, you know. But that's 200 people that aren't watching one of the big three anymore.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's literally hundreds upon thousands of those channels.
Well, and there's just so much choice, not only in the number of channels, but in the type of content. And, I mean, there's something out there for everybody, which is good and bad, because it's good, because if you can always find something that you should be enjoying, but it's bad because it means it's harder for some shows to hit that threshold amount of an audience to survive.
Yeah, well, yeah. With the exception of shows in maybe the top four or five, mm-hmm. None of these shows would have survived 5 to 6 years ago with these current viewership numbers.
Wow, even that recently, that you just 5 or 6 years ago. Wow, I would have figured. I mean, if you had said a decade or two, it's like, okay, I can see that.
No. I mean, the shows in the top five would have been at the bottom and questionable 5 years ago. 10 years ago, they would have had zero chance. They just would have been, they would have ended after an episode or two.
Well, and of course, the irony of that is these are by definition the top rated shows today.
Yes.
So for them to have barely survived had they had these ratings back then, sort of a deal. Again, it just shows the fracturing of the audience.
Yeah. And like I said, a lot, you know, some of it is, you know, we don't, you know, people don't watch live. That's why we, you know, there are things that are successful. And they are successful because there's a appointment television-esque nature to them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's buoyed other things. The fact that football is popular, not news. The fact that football is significantly less popular than it was, say, 15 years ago, but is so much more dominant than it was 15 years ago, all relates to the it's something people actually watch with the ads.
Yeah. Well, and again, there's some things, and sporting events are definitely one of them, where the whole time-shifting thing just doesn't make as much sense.
Yeah. The other thing that's becoming true of is news. Again, not particularly popular. And it's not that, you know, people have this idea, oh, news is doing so much better than it used to, and, you know, people are more interested. No. It's just that the same small number of people that watch news now watch it and watch the ads during it.
Yeah.
And watch it a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a year, 2 years, 3, 5 years later.
I'm curious if there is any kind of historical perspective on the interest in news programs based on or in relation to society's kind of comfort level, if you know what I mean. In other words, if we're on the brink of war, I would think people are going to be a bit more attuned to what's going on and watching it in the moment, because there may not be a, you know, a film at 11 sort of replay in the evening if it goes badly. Whereas if you're in a time of peace and everything's just kind of, you know, smooth sailing and nothing volatile is going on comparatively, people may tune out a little of that. I'm curious if that holds true or not.
And I don't have the numbers to back it up.
Yeah.
What I do have numbers to support is general news viewership, like everything else, is down. And again, when I say down, I'm talking historically. I'm talking 10, 20, 30, 40, 60 years worth.
Uh-huh.
You know, the idea that, you know, it's like newspaper readership. The idea that, you know, the head of the household came home and read the newspaper or watched, you know, one of the major network evening news channels or shows right before that primetime hour. That kind of just doesn't exist anymore.
I think that's a generational aspect.
It may be. The people that are interested are very but again, the idea that film at 11, oh, it might, you know, it would be passing. That, you know, again, relatively speaking, the 24-hour news channel is a new thing.
Yeah.
You know, the idea that you could get news any way other than, you know, that network hour right before prime time or at 11 p.m. locally is relatively new.
Well, and it's funny because the 24-hour news cycle, I think for most people, generally doesn't matter. But when it does matter to them for whatever reason, there's a particular story they need to follow or want to follow, it can matter a lot.
Yeah.
And again, I'm thinking back to when we had the bombings here in Austin a couple of months ago and such, and there's an actual, our cable channel has a 24-hour local news channel. And right. Most of the year, I forget it's even there. Those couple of days, particularly when it was in my immediate neighborhood, I had that thing on, you know, constantly.
Absolutely. But that goes back to what we were talking about. You had that on, which is, again, a very unique look. It's not like you were watching the ABC Nightly News or one of the major broadcast network nightly news hour or half hour that they do every day.
Exactly. I was watching TV, but not anything that we would be covering on these kinds of numbers.
Exactly. It was breaking news, special reports, uniquely local, you know, again, it, you know, it would be interesting. I don't know the answer to this, and, you know, but yes, for a situation like you're talking about, it would be very interesting to see if the big national nightly news programs did better in that market at that time period. I honestly don't know the answer.
Yeah.
You know, like right now, are more people watching, you know, the network nightly news in like Hawaii with the volcanoes currently? I don't know.
I would think there is a percentage who either have relatives or know people in Hawaii or whatever that are much more tuned into that. And there are a lot of people who it's like, that's still going on. You know, it comes down to how relevant is it to a particular person.
Yeah. And sadly, when we see the huge spikes in news viewership, they're much less related to news than they are to sensationalism.
True.
Or celebrity. I mean, some of the highest rated news programs of this year are going to revolve around the royal wedding.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering about that. I kind of figured it would.
It's not something that truly kind of affects the day-to-day lives of just about anybody.
Well, it depends.
Particularly here in the States.
If you've got somebody who's actually interested in that and they talk about it ad nauseum, it can, in fact, impact you quite a bit.
Yes, absolutely. You know, obviously, big election cycles tend to draw interest to news, but yeah, even that doesn't tend to help, again, kind of those classic big network nightly news programs. It tends to help the 24-hour channels, and it, you know, people look for a pundit that likes what, you know, agrees with them, and then just watches that.
Yeah.
So you go to your CNNs, your MSNBCs, your Fox Newses, and you can go, oh, okay, there's a certain percentage of the population that likes, you know, commentator X's perspective, and so their ratings go up, but not kind of a generic news thing.
Would you think that holds true for late night talk show hosts?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I was going to say, I tend to, and I'm watching them on YouTube, so not when they're actually airing live or whatever, but I tend to follow the ones that their sensibility aligns more with mine than others that don't.
And it's interesting. interesting that you say that because, boy, and this is weird. That has, the late night show has become much more political than it has been in previous generations.
Oh, yeah.
It has also become much less star-driven.
I would agree with that. Having watched a clip from, I guess, Seth Meyers' show that had Tom King, and he was there talking about the comic book work he does, which I thought was really cool. But for the mass audience, I really don't think the Miracle Man comic book is, you know, big name celebrity guest on the talk show that night.
Exactly. I mean, you go back to, you know, the 70s. Was the Tonight Show popular less? Did Johnny Carson have a following? Yes. But were there definite spikes when, you know, the big, you know, the Marlon Brandos of the world did those shows when a new Godfather film was coming out? Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'm not sure we see that as much now as we used to. It was also not kind of the circuit that it used to be where those people would make the rounds and kind of be on all the networks within a week or two.
Yeah.
You know, like when the Avengers film came out, I believe most of them did their kind of big appearances, surprise, surprise, on Jimmy Kimmel. Why? Because he's on the network owned by the same studio.
Yeah. The corporate hierarchy tends to matter in that respect, and they go to one of their sibling companies or whatever.
Exactly. And as we will talk about when we kind of get into some of the individual shows and stuff, that corporate hierarchy is becoming more and more important than audience and ad sales in some ways.
I believe it. It's interesting because, I mean, there are a couple of shows this time around that the ratings obviously have a huge sway on what gets picked up, renewed, what doesn't and such. But there were a couple of shows this time around where, like, one got renewed but isn't going to air. And there was one that it's like, it's doing great for the network, but are they going to keep it going or not? Because of, again, behind-the-scenes stuff. It's interesting how the behavior of the stars is mattering more and more. And the not just is it doing well in the ratings, but and we've talked about some of this before on, you know, you've told me, you know, a third season show is likely to get picked up because that'll get it to the syndication kind of numbers or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Or like you were just talking about, I think maybe before we started recording, about how if there's a show, it's a 10-episode arc, they're going to finish out the arc just to where it helps sell the DVDs or whatever.
Well, yeah, but and let's talk about it. The very specific case we're talking about in that, and that was before we started recording,
okay. Was
ABC had a show produced by Skydance Entertainment, actually, called 10 Days in the Valley. It starred Kara Sedgwick. It was a 10-part mystery where they had paid for and produced them all up front. It was going to be a big show for them on Sunday nights. It didn't work out. Arguably, it was the first show canceled of the season. It aired 4 episodes before being pulled off the air.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, they chose later in the year, kind of after Thanksgiving, in that Thanksgiving to New Year break period, after November sweeps, to air those remaining 6 episodes, I believe 2 at a time on Saturday evenings, which isn't really considered a ratings night anyways.
It's interesting because I think in that case, since they had all the episodes produced, it's like, well, it makes sense to air them. It's not like you've got to make the decision of do we keep producing it. But I remember, and this would be 20, 25 years ago when I was living in San Diego, there was a time or two that, actually more than that, but we would go up to LA and we'd watch some sitcoms being filmed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, sitcoms, live audience, shorter production time in terms of post-production, so they can cut it closer to it. We saw an episode, the pilot episode of Encore Encore, that was never aired because months later they reshot it with a different cast. And that was one that, okay, pretty long gestation time, but they're doing a pilot, they're trying to get the show working, they're testing it, okay, I get it. We saw what I think was either the final or penultimate episode of The Closer, I think it was, with Tom Selleck, Ed Asner, the guy who went on to be in Numbers and played Mr. Universe or whatever in the Serenity movie, and one or two other kind of name actors. And they filmed that night, and I swear it was on the air like 10 days later or something. And that's one of those.
For 3-camera live audience sitcoms, that's not uncommon.
Okay.
Usually they're in production. If you go to a filming, they will usually air between 10 and 21 days later.
That's kind of what I figured, but in those kinds of cases, if you, the ratings aren't there and they want to pull the plug, you get the maybe the one or two episodes after that because they've already filmed it, maybe not.
In most cases, that's irrelevant.
Okay.
Because the contracts are structured in such a way that when they're bought, they buy a certain number. And so even if they decide not to air them at some point, they've already committed to paying for a certain number. Currently, we're kind of on a tradition. Well, not traditional. Currently, we are on a 22-episode season is kind of the standard. Most new shows, when they are picked up from pilot, 13 episodes are committed to. Whether they cancel after three or four or, you know, all 13 or somewhere in between, kind of doesn't matter. They're paying for those 13.
When they make that decision and they've paid, they know they've got to pay for it.
Yes.
Do they, is the studio obligated to produce them? Or is it, hey, we're canceling it, we're not going to air it, so just let's be done with it? Or we're canceling it, but we still expect these other X episodes? Or is that case by case? Or
the simple answer is they paid for it. There's an obligation to produce in most cases. Now, it's funny because I believe Drew and I spoke about this on the Slack channel a week or two ago. And we were talking about shows that got canceled. We were just talking about 10 Days in the Valley. Very, whatever, interesting case. The 10 episodes existed. It was a 10 episode. There was a show, and I believe it was called The Reunion, that I had watched on Fox a number of years ago. And it was set up as a 20-year mystery. As I remember correctly, the basic premise of the show was there's a group of people that meet at a 20-year high school reunion.
We see them as kids and we see them as adults or whatever?
Well, they meet and I believe one of them is murdered.
Okay.
And the theory is one of the other ones in this group committed the murder. And then each week they would show us 1 year of these people's lives.
Ah.
So like the first episode was they get to the reunion, someone's murdered, and then we kind of saw their last few days of high school.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second episode we saw, you know, a year, their first year of college. And the third,
Got it.
So in theory it was going to have, I believe, 20 episodes to get to kind of solving it. Maybe 20, maybe 21, like a bookend, getting back to the reunion or whatever. So that was kind of the point. Well, they made the, again, at the time, the pickup from pilot was only 13 episodes, even with that concept. And it was canceled, I believe, after like four or five. Well, so then the question became, well, can we at least, you know, we'll learn the end of the story when the DVDs come out. Except we didn't, because the last seven were never produced. Whether or not all 13 were produced, I don't know. They never aired. They've never been released on a DVD. Because again, how do you put out a DVD set of the first 13 of a 20-part story?
Yeah.
I
mean, they can, because they've had some. It's like, here's what we did of the first season. It's incomplete, but get the full series run.
And again, when you have a full season, it's one thing. When you very specifically set something up as this is a 20-part mystery.
True.
And, you know, and I remember people, you know, this was, you know, again, quite a while ago. I don't want to say the internet didn't exist, but it was in the earlier days of the internet. And I can remember, you know, people, well, hey, what's, you know, can the producer at least tell us who did it or whatever? And the producer's basic answer was, well, we can't really tell you because characters that haven't even been introduced yet are going to play into what we thought was the final. And you know what I mean?
There's no benefit for a producer in that respect or a writer to say so-and-so did it.
Of course.
It would be, I mean, I can see why as a fan you'd want to know. I certainly would fall into that category, but you don't get the full story. You get a drop of boom. It was this, but no context, no buildup, no resolution.
Yep.
And you preclude sometimes getting some other venue, be it some shows have had novelizations that continue the storyline or comic books that do it or a movie that continues it, and some have come back.
Exactly.
You kind of cut all that off if you give the answer or whatever.
Yeah.
But all of this is making me wonder if they filmed any more of Time After Time last season, and if there's ever going to be a DVD set that tells its probably incomplete storyline.
I don't... How many...
Five, I think, is all they aired.
Is all they aired, yeah. And again, usually the answer to that is, and again, it depends when it started. Some initial orders are 9, particularly if they start after Christmas. Some are 10, some are 13. Usually the first And again, as we like to talk about, cancellation announcements are virtually never made because it doesn't make sense to announce cancellations.
Well, do you consider a decision to not renew the same as a cancellation?
Yes. And in most cases, that's the way we find out about cancellations is two things happen. Actors, production people, et cetera, are released from their contracts and then talk about it on their own.
Mm-hmm.
Or again, a show like we were just talking about where it was a 10 and like, oh, it's not going to be on next week, but don't worry, we'll show you the next ones in the coming months. And they get thrown on a Saturday. Okay. That was canceled. We paid for these. We have them. We don't want them to affect our numbers, so we'll find a time to air them. But let's face it, it's not part of our ongoing plans.
There was a show my sister and I finished watching last night. We recorded an episode on it because it was one of those that I can see where they thought the show was going to do well, and I can understand why the show probably didn't. Mm-hmm. And it was The Crossing, and about halfway through its run, I believe it was announced that it wasn't getting picked up for a second season.
Okay.
And I was wondering, one, how common is that? Two, it seems like a silly thing to do because a lot of people are going to say, well, why should I watch the other five or so episodes?
Yep.
And I don't know.
We talked about this. It only aired seven during the regular season.
Well, it also started really late.
Let me take a quick look. Let me actually bring it up here. Let me filter this sheet and look at it. So it started late April, which means they had lost a lot of faith in it before it ever aired. Premiering you're not expecting something to do well that comes out in April.
Yeah.
And like I said, only seven managed to make it into the before the end of May time period. So those are the only ones on this list.
What I found odd was it was 11 episodes, and again, I was expecting like a 13-episode kind of commitment sort of a deal. But the other thing is it ended on a note that felt like they'd paced it for the 11 episodes. Now, whether it was well-paced or not, it ended on enough of a end-of-season note that it wasn't just, well, this is all we had time to tell.
But again, it was a spring-slash-winter-whatever show.
Yeah.
Those shows, rather than being ordered as 13, assuming you're going to get 9 for that part of the year to make it 22, are bought in groups of 9, 10s, 13s, etc. So they might have known, even if everything goes swimmingly well, it's coming on after the new year.
Mm-hmm.
We get 11 episodes for the first season. If it does well, hopefully we'll get 22 for season 2, and it'll be on in the fall next year. So the fact that how many other episodes they had is kind of what they wrote the first season to, not surprising.
Yeah. That makes sense.
What is, and again, that tends to happen on the after New Year's premieres. The shows that start in the fall, usually the first season is assumed to be 22. And so there's 13, and then we figure we will get 9 before the new year to finish, or we'll be told to make the other 9 before the new year to air in that, you know, winter and fall or winter and spring season.
That makes sense.
And end in May and.
Yeah.
So, yeah, shows that start after the new year can be paced to kind of a more 8 to 13 episode schedule, depending on what it is.
Well, and my sister and I, or I was watching maybe, we were catching up on some show, and maybe I was either catching up on Once Upon a Time, or we were catching up on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., something, and we had to, you know, stream an episode that our DVR had missed or whatever. So we actually, you know, we're going through the commercials and noticed a few shows. And I'm like, well, one, I hadn't heard about them. And two, it seemed late in the game to be putting new shows out there. But when you've got other shows that have fallen by the wayside or whatever, it makes sense to have things waiting in the wings to fill the hours.
Yeah. And back to kind of the sports and news being DVR proof. There's a dying market there, and there's a bunch of confusion on how to deal with this. The Fox television network, while not completely given up on scripted entertainment, has basically said they want to go to more news and more sports and really not focus on scripted entertainment. Fox has, well, the shows it renewed, it's significantly fewer than it would have renewed in the past. And it's not like it's replacing them with a bunch of new ideas. No, it's replacing a whole day with Thursday Night Football. They just signed a deal to bring a wrestling show for 2 hours to take another 2 hours, another day of primetime television away from them. Again, at least there is one network, the Fox network. It's kind of, you know, maybe it's not worth it for us to air traditional comedy and or drama scripted programming.
I can kind of understand that because I think there are times where dramas are really big, other times comedies are really big, other times game shows make a comeback for a while, or...
And game shows are usually cheap filler.
Yeah. Well, and when they get really popular, they seem really cost-effective or whatever. But then you've also got other times where you'll have kind of those... Not game shows, but more the competition shows, the Survivor, those sorts of things, the Idol, whatever.
Which are basically
whatever.
Game shows.
Yeah, but I think a little bit of it, some of them more so than others.
Well, okay, let me rephrase that. The way they're shot and produced and the costs associated with them, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, are more game show-esque than scripted programming.
Absolutely. They're certainly not scripted programming and such.
It's funny. The karaoke shows fit in this to me as well. Mm-hmm. I do find it, you know, from the early days of American Idol to all the knockoff clones to kind of the current King of the Hill, the voice in that category. I do find it interesting that essentially one of the more popular shows on television is a nationwide karaoke contest.
Yeah.
Because these are not original artists producing original writing song, you know, whatever, or even bands. It is a person singing a song you already know with a house band playing. It's a karaoke contest.
Mm-hmm. But they can be popular.
They can be extremely popular.
And every once in a while, some new star or whatever will come out of that. I don't know that it's happened particularly often.
Oh, absolutely it has. Carrie Underwood's one of the biggest stars in country music and came out of one of those type shows.
True. The one I was thinking of was Lucy Hale that came out of the junior version of one of them. I forget which one it was.
Lucy Hale?
She was in Pretty Little Liars.
Okay.
She's got another show that is either starting up or maybe started up and already ended or something where, what was the premise? She thought she was terminally ill and turns out she wasn't, but...
Oh, yeah, that show got canceled. Yeah, Life Sentence is on the CW this season.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a replacement for Valor. Is she a singer or...
She started as that, but then went into acting.
Okay. Okay. Like I said, when I just heard Hale and Lucy, I was wondering if you were thinking of Izzy Hale, who is a singer and a rock singer and has a band. I'm like, I don't remember her being on any of these competition shows.
I mean,
and she was not.
Most of the competitors will go on and have a career of some sort, but not one that you would recognize the name of necessarily years later. Every once in a while, one of them is able to segue it into something where either they have that successful music career or they go into acting or something like that. But it does seem like a lot of these kind of karaoke competitions or whatever is just let's churn as many people through this, rotate the judges enough to keep it, you know, interesting, exciting, and to have some new announcement for every season or something. But ultimately, in my mind at least, and this is just the way, you know, I like serialized scripted dramas, these things at the end of the day kind of don't matter. Other people eat them up and they love them. That's great.
The issue with those type of shows, like we were talking about, this is an interesting thing. So the interesting side of the cheaper to produce and forcing people to watch live, or, you know, not mm-hmm. forcing, but
encouraging
aspect of something that people choose to watch live, or there's a reason people want to watch it live. The downside of that is it has no, you know, we talk about this in the comic novels, it has no long tail.
Yeah.
No one watches, you know, no one is watching American Idol from 8 years ago anymore. Sure, if one of those people becomes big, it becomes part of a, hey, remember when, and those clips end up placed. But certainly no one is, you know, it's not like those are on Netflix thing and people, there's people just marathoning old seasons of those type shows.
Yeah, you're not going to really see the DVD collections of them the way you would of a lot of these other shows.
And they're not syndicated. It's not like there's cable stations dedicated to just, you know, showing old syndicated reruns.
Yeah, but they're cheaper to produce, so they don't really need that outlet, hopefully.
Well, and again, it depends who's producing them, how much they're paying for them, what they're, you know. If they, and most of those type of shows are produced in-house by the network.
Mm-hmm.
So arguably, the network is not looking for the syndication deal. Obviously, it'd be great. But the network is like, no, I need something that people are going to watch on my network right now.
Yeah. Well, and I think those karaoke competitions appeal to the we will make you a star aspect, and the game shows we'll give you some money kind of thing, and make people feel like they've got a chance to get something tangible out of it if they just get lucky, you know, whatever.
And in some cases, it's just a fun aspect of it.
Yeah.
I'll give a perfect example. A syndicated show that does very well and has for many, many years is Jeopardy.
My parents are big fans of that, yeah.
Me and my father-in-law will watch it, and it's just fun for the two of us to try to figure out who's smarter, who's better, who's going to win, you know, whatever. You know, it becomes a game you can almost play along with. There are some game shows like that. There are some that aren't like that. But, you know, Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune, kind of the two stalwarts in that department that are still on the air, I think many people watch them not to see someone else win, but to see if they can figure them out.
Yeah, there's a certain self-validation of I can answer this faster than they can.
Exactly. Or, you know, I can solve the puzzle on Wheel of Fortune faster than the contestant or whatever.
Yeah. There's an aspect of audience engagement and making the audience feel good about themselves because they know the answer or what have you.
Yeah. So there is clearly something different.
Yeah. Yeah.
But again, reruns for those things. Yeah, it's interesting. Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune do better in reruns than many of these other shows we're talking about as well. Because there's a timelessness to them, you know.
Well, they've got so many episodes in those cases, too. It's not like you've necessarily, I remember this one, so I know the answers.
Exactly.
Yeah. There's a replayability to them, which helps them.
You want to, I don't know, how do you want to do this?
By
network, by...
Yeah, let's just go through the networks. We usually do that. We'll just go alphabetically, starting with ABC.
All right. ABC. Let's see if there's anything particularly interesting over at ABC. For comic book fans, let's start there. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is returning. Doesn't have the greatest ratings. Every year for the last two or three now, I've been saying, ooh, I'm not sure how many years this has left, but they are finding a way to bring it back. It's on Friday nights. It does okay on Friday nights. It's certainly not that, I believe when it debuted, it was on Tuesday nights. And it was kind of a star for ABC. It is several years from that era.
Is it getting a full season or just like a 10-episode half season?
That
I was thinking it was only getting like 10 episodes and just kind of a swan song kind of a thing.
That may be true. There will be more. How many more? I don't have in my notes anyways.
Well, it's interesting because... Another one that was right around that area in the ratings from ABC was Once Upon a Time, and this was its final season, season 7 of what I will call 6, and you almost could have called this Twice Upon a Time, because a lot of the cast, as we had talked about before, when we knew this was going to happen, a lot of the cast didn't continue. So they recast Henry, one of the lead characters, and it was now set many years later, and...
Well, didn't Jennifer Morrison, who was arguably the star of the show, leave before this season?
Yeah, she left, and the two who played Charming and Snow White left.
Yeah.
So a lot of the core characters that had anchored the show, I mean, they guest starred a time or two this season. But it was one of those that you could argue, would they have been better off having a clean cut at 6 and just kind of ending it there and not doing almost this... epilogue-ish, sequel-ish season.
Again, you're looking at it from viewers.
Absolutely.
They figured out a way to make it profitable to do more.
Well, and from the actor's point of view, the ones that stayed, absolutely it made sense.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a job for another year. It was a pay, you know.
Well, Lana Parrilla actually directed an episode or two.
Okay.
So yeah. It's a good opportunity for her.
Yeah.
And she became one of the lead characters, not just overshadowed by, you know, a few other people.
Yeah. And again, this comes up in comic books and it comes up kind of in all media. There is why are we doing another one of these?
Mm-hmm.
Arguably, if it's profitable, that's why.
Yeah. There's the business aspect and the artistic aspect. From an artistic standpoint, I don't know they needed the 7th season. from a business standpoint, they had it. Why not take it?
Yeah, absolutely.
No, that makes sense.
And here's the thing. Seasons like that, even if they're bad, with syndication deals, with kind of a known quantity, knowing even if you get that kind of year-over-year drop-off, they're still, for the network that's buying them, they are a safer bet than new show.
Yeah.
Are they going to be a huge hit like a new show potentially could be? No. But most new shows aren't huge hits and fail worse. And it's also not going to be that. It's a business, and clearly they found a way to make another season profitable.
Well, and it wasn't a bad season. It just felt a little redundant in a few ways. It did give the overall series a nice ending, so I appreciated that.
Which, you know, and that was a show I watched. I found the first season on YouTube right before the second season started and loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And like ran through all of them in a week or so, and thought it was, and then I started watching the second season as they were airing live, and it quickly lost my interest, and there were things I didn't like about it. And I mean, as I believe, yeah, that first season was great. It was a huge star for ABC. I mean, so much so that I believe they did a spinoff, and they were two versions of the show on.
Yeah, Once Upon a Time Wonderland, I think it is.
Yeah, and that was either the second or third season of the, you know. But the audience quickly disappeared after that. And again, they found a way to deal with it and make it profitable and keep enough of the audience. But it was certainly a long way from where it had been at one point.
Well, and even taking something that is a big brand for them and keeping it alive and active for another year is beneficial, just from a merchandising perspective, etc. Now, that may be more for the studio than for the network, but either way, it's a win.
Inhumans, by the way, will not be back. Which arguably is an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. spinoff.
Maybe. They never really connected the two. I enjoyed it, but it was one that it wasn't, they didn't knock it out of the park.
Yeah, see, I actually really enjoyed it. And I know there are lots of people that didn't like it. And that's fine. I haven't watched Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. since early in the first season. So I had no connection to it. Inhumans stood alone enough, and I enjoyed it enough that it was fine for me.
I think Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s fourth season was the best. The fifth one here was probably better than the second or third or whatever, but it was not the high point of the thing. Some of the writing just wasn't as tight as it had been in some past years, particularly the fourth one where I thought it just was firing on all cylinders.
Yeah, and I heard a lot of good things about the fourth season, but I think by that point it had lost so much of its audience it was going to have a hard time recovering.
Oh, absolutely. If they had started at the quality of the fourth season, it would be going strong now, I believe, if they could have maintained it. But they didn't start strong, and they fumbled, I think, during part of the second and third seasons. And irrecoverably so.
The first season started amazingly strong. Arguably, depending on critics, whatever, personal taste, wasn't that great for the first half of the first season, which is where it lost me. I've heard a lot of people say that it got significantly better the last five or so episodes of that first season.
When it started connecting with the movies.
Yeah, which I believe is when Civil War came out, and then it kind of tied right into that.
Yeah.
Or not Civil War, Winter Soldier. So yeah, it'll be back. Inhumans won't. Once Upon a Time. Anything else you would argue is comic booky on this list?
There's two I want to talk about. We talked a little about The Crossing already. That, okay, I think they were hoping was going to be another Lost or something like that. It had a lot of the hallmarks.
Sure.
Too slow of a burn, not surprised it kind of fizzled out.
Sure.
The other one, and I have not watched the two-part finale yet. I'll be doing that with my sister soon. And we recorded on The Crossing. We're also going to record on the, once we watch the finale, on Deception.
Okay.
This is one that reminded my sister actually a lot of Castle in various respects.
Okay.
You've got a guy who's like a magician, not like he is a magician, and...
As in illusionist or an actual magician?
Illusionist, like a David Copperfield kind of...
Fair enough. Just wasn't clear.
Nope. Fair point to clarify. Something goes wrong. He's getting this big scandal, and he winds up helping the FBI in hopes of getting the FBI to help him kind of solve what really happened with the scandal.
Okay.
It's actually a lot of fun. If you like kind of heist shows where they've got the... Here's the big, how do we get in here and do this kind of a robbery or whatever, you know, how do we con somebody sort of a thing. It really does well on that. It's funny because when my sister had mentioned the castle reference, at first it took me a minute, but this had a lot of potential. But again, it was one of those they started too late in the season, didn't really, I think, hype it all that well, and I kind of expected it was going to be a one-season kind of a wonder sort of a thing. So the fact it's at this lower third or whatever of the ratings for ABC doesn't really surprise me much. But I've enjoyed what I've seen, and like I said, we're going to be talking about it, and it's a fun show.
Yeah, and let's look at first season shows on ABC, because there were some huge successes and some failures. As we kind of talked about earlier, 10 Days in the Valley was a huge failure, did not work. Mm-hmm. Inhumans was middling, will not continue. For the People did not work. Even though it is renewed, did not do particularly well. It's going to be interesting to see how that does in coming seasons and if it sticks around too much longer.
Okay.
Let me see who produces that. Oh, it's an in-house production, which again, as we talked about, it means more and more than it ever has. The Crossing will not return. Kevin Probably Saves the World will not return. Deception will not return. The Mayor, which was a sitcom, will not return. A very late in the year edition, Alex, Inc., Zach Braff's return to network sitcoms will not return. And then we've got the three highest rated and most successful, one of which won't return, the other three will. Station 19, again, a mid-season show I know nothing about. It's got okay numbers, is coming back. I believe it's a police or fire show.
I was thinking a Fire Station, but I'm not certain.
But again, I know nothing else about it. Splitting Up Together, of course, was again a late season comedy that did very well. That one's going to be interesting because we can get into why it might have done well as we get to one of these other ones. The Good Doctor, which started in the fall, was very successful, was the third highest rated show on ABC this year. Their biggest success, without question, certainly will be returning. And then the first/10th season of the new Roseanne, which can account for part of Splitting Up Together's success. Get this out of the way here. Roseanne was the most popular show on television this season.
Yeah,
no ifs, ands, or buts about it.
It's interesting. It did amazingly well. It was renewed, and it will not air for a second season.
Yes. And I realize right now there's lots of people happy, unhappy, whatever, about that decision. I will say this from a business perspective, and I know the people that are happy about it are happy about it. The people that are unhappy about it are unhappy about it. And they're all discussing, oh, what a brave, decision this was by the ABC head of production. Here's the thing. I think ultimately this will cost Channing her job. It's not going to be this week. It's not going to be within the next month or two. That is a $500 million hole ABC needs to fill.
Yeah, well, they've paid for it. They're paying the actors, I believe, some of the writers. I mean, there's a significant outlay, and they're not getting a show out of it.
And like I said, it's $500 million worth of advertising. Those ratings are unbelievable. Now, the argument can be made that the advertisers would have left, and it wouldn't have produced that income either. That is an argument. The other thing, the reason I wanted to kind of come back to Splitting Up Together. Splitting Up Together came out, debuted, and was bookended with it. CBS has seen this very often. Whatever they put right after The Big Bang Theory does very well.
Yeah.
And they go, hey, we've got a hit. And then they move it someplace else the next season. They go, oh, it wasn't really a hit. People just didn't bother to change the channel after The Big Bang Theory. So if you look at what Roseanne brought in for its ads, plus the lift it gave as compared to other shows that were on that day when Roseanne wasn't on earlier in the year, you're talking about $500 million in lost ad revenue. That's a huge hole to fill.
Oh, yeah. My sister and I have been talking about this one a lot just because it's been in the news a lot. Mm-hmm. And, my take on it is if you've got some actors that are talented and one that you're not going to use. And you've got some writers that are talented and you're kind of already outlaying all this stuff. And I get they don't want to, you know, have Roseanne Barr actually profit from this. So that that's why they don't want to continue the show. That complicates doing a spinoff. Do a non-spinoff. Take these actors and stuff, use these writers, do a show about a group of people in witness protection. You can actually put some jabs in of, you know, the her that caused them to all have to go into witness protection or something. It would be a new show, so it's not like it's literally a spinoff of Roseanne. It's just, I mean, they'd probably still get sued.
Yeah, I was going to say, that gets real dicey in copyright.
It depends how close and how separate you make the characters and whatnot. It's just, it's unfortunate that so many people are getting impacted by this in terms of the writers, the people on the crew and stuff like that. You know, it for something that came out and did so well, to have some behind the scenes shenanigans and stupid stuff, you know, kill it, I think is unfortunate. I haven't watched the show. I was never a fan of Roseanne before, either the show or the comedian or whatever. But it's a shame to see this sort of a thing happen.
And like I said, ABC, if you take the CW out, ABC is the fourth place finisher. And again, we kind of talk about how the horse race between the networks, at the end of the day, doesn't mean that much.
Mm-hmm.
The truth is, however, ABC is in fourth place. And between the fact that the ABC Disney Corporation has chosen to air their NFL football on a cable station with ESPN getting Monday Night Football and the other networks all having NFL football, they are virtually guaranteed to be in fourth place for the foreseeable future. A decision like this arguably gives, and again, it's a ridiculous outside chance. But again, if you saw the upfronts that ABC did, they hung a lot of their entire scripted season around not just the show Roseanne, but the strength of that evening, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
If they have a particularly bad year and the CW somehow manages to have a particularly good year, something I don't see, I mean, arguably that could be a fight now, something that we never thought we'd say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And again, the biggest part of that is the choice the corporation has made to make money with ESPN and show football on a cable network that they is the highest costing cable network. And it's a business choice, and it makes sense. You know, people go, why is Monday Night Football not on broadcast? Well, because people pay as much as they do for ESPN because it has that.
Yeah.
And it's a choice they made. And, you know, it's interesting. Could one of the other networks make that choice sometime in the future? Absolutely. I mean, NBC Universal owns a ton of networks. Could you imagine if Sunday Night Football went from NBC to USA and how that would change the dynamic of not only what NBC does on Sunday nights in the fall and winter, but on the demand for a station like USA in cable and how much, you know, NBC Universal could charge cable companies to carry the USA network.
For a non-sports example, when we get to CBS, putting Star Trek Discovery on CBS All Access versus the CBS network, it got some people to go for the streaming service.
It absolutely did. But you are literally talking pennies and dollars difference in those two comparisons.
Understood, but it's the same thing. If you've got various channels out there and you've got various draws, you're going to put your draws on the various channels versus have one that's doing gangbusters and the others that are struggling.
Well, and CBS is unique in that it has no parent company. Mm-hmm. CBS is CBS. This is the business CBS is in. Disney is in a different business. General Electric, that owns NBC Universal, is in a different business. News Corp, particularly with the choice to sell off most of their entertainment rights, which is a whole different interesting thing that's happening. Again, this came up on the Slack channel. People kind of say, hey, what's your opinion on this? And my opinion is, we spent 3 months talking about, oh my God, what's it going to mean when Disney gets all Fox's stuff? And Comcast quickly kind of came in the last week or so and said, not so fast. We may end up with all this.
Yeah. The corporate politics of all of this is being, I think, a bigger and bigger influence on this.
It's a huge influence. It, more so than ever, it is a much bigger influence. it is a very different game these different companies are playing. You know, arguably, General Electric, Disney, and CBS are not in the same business. CBS is truly into television.
Yeah, yeah.
Those other two are not.
They've got other concerns, and the TV is a factor in that.
And in most cases, arguably even a small factor.
Yeah.
So, again, that does play into a lot of this. Just looking purely at the top shows after Roseanne, Grey's Anatomy will be back for its 15th season, continues to be a juggernaut. Interestingly enough, Shonda has left to sign an exclusive with Netflix. Her shows obviously will stay where they were as they were produced by ABC. What's interesting is her subsequent shows, every new show she's done has been less successful than the previous one.
That's not too surprising to me.
It may or may not be, but kind of the narrative that she was this television genius that couldn't miss is over the last number of years proved to be more and more inaccurate. She had one very successful show. She had a second very good show. She had a third average show and a fourth and fifth failure.
Yeah, but I think it's hard for kind of one person to have, particularly concurrently, that many really solid shows. And even somebody like Berlanti, who's doing a lot of stuff over on the CW, I think he's one of the guys behind Deception.
Yeah, no, he is. Absolutely. And that's the other thing. The job title we think of as showrunner current is a job that never existed in the past. And so those Norman Lear spelling kennel type people,
mm-hmm,
with that type of success, where there are four and five major hits all under their name airing concurrently, can't happen, I don't think, anymore. And it's not because there's not talent enough. These people are asked to do more and more and more that they never were asked to do in the past.
Yeah.
You know, in the old days, those people were called executive producers. And that literally meant they fronted the money and came up with some ideas. And they worked deals, they negotiated, things like that.
They got the ball rolling and then let other people run with it.
Yes. And again, they were very involved in kind of the day-to-day business side, cutting deals, bringing in actors, negotiating contracts, negotiating ads, that kind of thing. The current showrunner does that, half the times directing half the episodes, half the times the head writer, and in the writer's room on a daily basis. And again, you can't do that for four, five, six shows at the same time and give enough attention to them.
Yeah, this is not enough hours in the day, yeah.
And give enough attention to all of them. You just can't, you know. Yeah. Again, owning a production company is very different than kind of being the single driving force behind a show like the modern showrunner kind of is.
Yeah.
You know, we can discuss, hey, is that a good thing? That is a bad, whatever. It is what it is. You know, the Goldbergs has slowly become ABC's most successful comedy. It's a show I always thought was really good. I think Adam Goldberg does a great job, again, running that show. Again, though, they gave him a shot with another show last year. I don't even remember the name of it now. Starred Jenna Elfman and an imaginary animal. Was a complete failure. So again, the ability to have the golden touch, there doesn't seem to be any television with that currently.
Yeah, I think the closest I could say is coming to that is Berlanti's got his name behind a number of shows.
He has his name.
Not all of which are successful.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
Yeah. But it gives the illusion of him being that sort of a you know, Aaron Spelling, you know, a Stephen Cannell kind of a guy.
Yep.
And it's all about branding, so maybe that's enough.
Yeah. The Middle was very successful. A show that very quietly was very successful for 9 seasons. It was never a top 1 or 2 show, but it was never anything out of the top 10 either. Very quietly successful, came to an end this season. Again, one of the few places you do kind of get, hey, cancellation announcements is, you know, join us for the final season, make a big deal out of it. That's the one place you kind of get a cancellation. Splitting Up Together, we kind of already covered, and it'll be interesting to see what happens. There, The Modern Family, American Housewife, Blackish, Scandal, Speechless, we're into the realm of very average now.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get into the mostly canceled with a couple of renewals when you get into stuff lower than that. You know, How to Get Away with Murder, Alex Inc., The Mayor, Deception, Designated Survivor, Kevin Probably Saves the World, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Got anything else you want to talk about with ABC?
No, I'm good. Move over to CBS.
CBS. anything you want to talk about here, because they don't have anything that I would argue is clearly in the comic book vein on this network.
There are four of these shows that I'm watching.
Okay.
MacGyver, which I don't think is a bad show, but it's certainly not the old MacGyver. SWAT, which I've watched the first episode at, actually at a comic convention here in town. The local CBS affiliate was promoting it there, and it's like, okay, it was good. My sister watched a few more episodes, said, hey, check it out, and I kept going with it, and I really enjoyed it. It's actually a surprisingly good show.
That's the guy from Criminal Minds, correct?
Shamar Moore is the anchor on that. He was in Birds of Prey, actually, way back, so it gives it a comic book connection.
Yes, he was.
Wow. I'm watching Bull. I think it's a good show. They've did a couple of weird things this season, but it's still working. And then there's the one episode they actually aired on TV of Star Trek Discovery, and of course I've watched that full thing. And I get why they put that over on All Access to drive traffic to there, but I don't know, I'd have been just as happy if it had been on network television, but doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I still think that deal's coming somewhere. I just don't know. It's already been syndicated to Netflix everywhere on the planet but the United States.
That doesn't surprise me, yeah.
I understand they've got a, you know, we've talked about this before and about what, you know, kind of how much CBS All Access is a real business and versus it not being. And so I get they kind of got to give it the appearance that they're trying to do something for it. Maybe it takes till it has three or four seasons and then they syndicate it to a smaller, you know, something like the Sci-Fi Channel. I still have to believe it'll end up someplace else.
I think so, but it may be after the series ends.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's kind of what I was saying. I think it will. Going through the list of first season shows on CBS, well, we had really two successes, one mediocre, and a bunch of stuff that didn't work and was canceled. The clear success, and again, fairly simple to predict, Young Sheldon, the Big Bang spinoff, being the most popular show on television for the last number of years, this year barely falling to third place, but that had much more to do with two other. Roseanne's huge success was number one. This Is Us was technically number two, but the post Super Bowl episode is what made that the case. You take that individual episode out, The Big Bang Theory actually is number two. So again, This Is Us, again, a very successful show, don't get me wrong, but yet. Point is, Big Bang Theory is still one of the most popular shows on television. Its spinoff airing in the time slot right after it, which is, as we talked about, propped up several shows over the years, clearly was going to be a hit.
Oh, yeah.
SEAL Team, David Boreanaz's war show, did a lot better than the two shows that were similar to it. Basically, when the season started, we got three of these type black op war shows.
Uh-huh.
This is the one returning. Probably had the biggest star. That's arguable in David Boreanaz. The Brave was one of the other ones over on NBC with Anne Heche, also a pretty big name. But anyways, the SEAL Team's the one that seems to be more popular and the one that will continue. Me, Myself, and I, which had John Larroquette, and I can't remember the gentleman's name who was on SNL in recent years, did not last. 9JKL, which had some old favorites of mine, you know, Linda Lavin and Elliot Gould, some kind of classic sitcom people, also didn't last. SWAT, while doing average at best, is returning. Wisdom of the Crowd was also not doing particularly well. It ended at 13. There were some issues with the lead of that show. I can't remember his name at the moment.
Yeah, I'm surprised it actually aired all 13.
Oh, why not?
Because I thought around issue 5, or episode 5, when that stuff surfaced around whatever the scandal was around him, I thought it was dead.
Jeremy Piven, right?
Jeremy Piven, yes.
Yeah. And again, if this show had done better, and I remember saying this at the time, it was at about episode 3 or 4 or 5, like you said, when that scandal kind of started making headlines.
Yeah.
And I remember saying at the time, if its numbers stay where it's at, they'll figure out a way to get rid of him and just keep the show going.
Mm-hmm.
Its numbers continued to decline, as is normal once you get kind of past those first 2-3 episodes. And it landed where it was, and it wasn't worth the effort to deal with that.
Well, it's funny, because the nature of the show with a crowdsourced crime solving, the way you write him out is you have him killed, and then the new plot is they've also got to find out who killed him.
Sure.
I mean, writing him out would have been dirt simple. Just wasn't worth doing.
Again, there is almost no one you can't write out of a there are very, very, very rare exceptions.
I think there are a couple where it gets a little more challenging. If you were to take Jason Bull out of Bull or MacGyver out of MacGyver, when you've got a title character, but other than that, and even then...
No, but you can you can either recast them or add a second in command. You know, and we'll get, when we get to Fox, we'll talk about
that. I was going to say, we'll talk about that with Fox.
They did write a title character out. A show I am completely unfamiliar with called Instinct, which is apparently returning.
Yeah, I know nothing about that one either.
I believe it was a mid-season show, but apparently it's coming back. And Living Biblically, another sitcom that just failed miserably. So those are kind of the new ones. Nothing overly interesting. Like I said, SEAL Team and Young Sheldon are clearly the successes, SEAL Team being a moderate success at best, even.
What do you attribute Elementary, which has the lowest average ratings, getting renewed?
Well, okay, first off, you notice there's only four viewings that came, or episodes that aired in season.
Got it. Fair enough.
It's essentially a summer show, and it is cheap enough or gets enough of a rating that, you know, where it fits, it's profitable to continue doing it.
Okay. It's got an audience or whatever. It's working for them, so they keep it.
Exactly.
Okay. Fair enough. Fair enough.
Madam Secretary.
It's just when I see cancel, and renewed at the bottom, it's like, well, I got to ask.
Madam Secretary's in the same boat.
Yeah.
Again, it'll be interesting to see if those all end up in season. Elementary already kind of isn't, and Madam Secretary will be interesting to see if it does or not. We go kind of from the bottom up now. Code Black, also a third season show that had two short seasons, medical drama, is finally done. Scorpion made it to four seasons and is done. MacGyver doing okay on Friday nights. Judd Hirsch's second season comedy, Superior Donuts, is done. Blue Bloods, again, that Friday night block will continue. Tom Selleck's, you know, doing very well.
Yeah.
NCIS Los Angeles will get a 10th season. Man, it's hard to believe that show's been on for 9 years already. Hawaii Five-0, again, part of that Friday night block and the most successful of them, coming back for its 9th season. I know they moved some people around to save some money last year, and there were people questioning whether or not it could survive without some of those actors. And again, it did and did just fine and will return again. So again, there's virtually no one that can't be replaced.
Well, and it wasn't the two leads that left. It was the kind of the other two cops on the team.
Okay.
I think if you'd gotten rid of McGarrett and Dano, it would have been harder. I think it still would have continued, probably, but they'd have brought in some other lead guy to replace, you know,
Or arguably the two people that left could have become the leads, and you brought in new people to replace them.
Well, yeah. Gut feeling is they probably would not have done that.
Okay. I haven't watched that show since early in the first season.
Yeah.
Yeah, NCIS New Orleans keeps chugging along. Criminal Minds, for a show that has had a ton of people recast, replaced, move, and lots of backstage drama, continues to do well, and it will return.
Mm-hmm.
Man with a Plan's coming back. Life in Pieces doing just fine. Bull, Kevin Can Wait, NCIS, and Mom, and The Big Bang Theory. All, I mean, those are kind of the top shows. Those will all be back. Nothing surprising there. The fact that The Big Bang Theory, they managed to sign everyone for another couple of years. You know, again, if it's worth doing and it's profitable, they'll find a way to make that happen.
Yeah.
And that is something we are seeing more and more. Shows are going much longer than they ever have.
Well, if you've got one that can make it past that first year or two successfully, even if not brilliantly, and you give them either time to build an audience or you keep the audience to some degree that you've got, well, yeah, why not keep them around as long as you can? I think in some cases it comes down to, are the actors willing to keep re-signing?
Yeah, and again, that can always be fixed with recasting and bigger checks.
Sometimes more so than others.
Yes. And again, when I make predictions, I always say the assumption is they will figure it out. There are great examples of them figuring it out, and there are great examples of them occasionally not figuring it out. HouseMD is one of the big examples of they'll pay people and figure it out where they didn't.
Well, and Once Upon a Time was one of those. They had a lot of people leave. They made some changes and stuff. You could argue how well it worked or not. The bottom line is it didn't go for more than a season after
that. Yeah, but they figured it out. But hadn't they already started losing people and recast and changed things even before that?
They'd had some rotating cast members and such, but the core group of the Savior and her family had been there throughout.
Okay.
It's when you took kind of the spine of the show out and replaced it with another one, that's where it starts to get dicey.
Bowl's interesting in the fact that this is a show that arguably had a character that some people said, how are you going to write him out of his show and not kill it? Clearly that didn't happen. And Michael Weatherly has done an admirable job anchoring this show.
Yes.
So, you know, that worked. You know, that's one of those cases where it worked out for everybody eventually. And, you know, they're all continuing to be profitable. That other show, as we talk about, NCIS, still NCIS, after 15 seasons, and it will continue to return.
Yeah.
Again, Mom, Chuck Lorre, with the Big Bang Theory, Mom, Two and a Half Men. He just has a history of doing really well, and particularly for CBS. Even though, interestingly, let me verify this on Mom. He works for Warner Brothers. Those are all Warner Big Bang. All the Chuck Lorre shows are Warner Brothers shows.
Yet they're airing on CBS. That's interesting.
Yes. But again, they are so successful, ownership in that case, and CBS has to keep them around.
Yeah.
Again, as ownership becomes bigger and bigger and more important, Big Bang Theory, Mom, Young Sheldon aren't going anywhere.
Yeah, they're successful, and as long as you've got enough of the actors and the writing people keeping it going and stuff, it doesn't need to end anytime soon. Yeah. What's the longest a sitcom has run for?
It depends on what you consider a sitcom. The answer is, if you want kind of the simple, easiest answer, if you flip over to Fox, you will see The Simpsons just completed its 29th season and will be back for its 30th.
Let's take animated out of the equation, because I think that's a different ballpark, a different kind of game. I'm thinking a standard kind of a three-camera shoot. I mean, we've had some that have gone on just, you know, incredibly long. I'm wondering if there gets to a point where you can't keep giving the original people the pay raises or whatever to keep them engaged, and it can be hard to swap out leads sometimes.
Okay, so Simpsons is currently at 29 and coming back. Family Guy is currently at 16 and coming back. American Dad is at 15, now on cable and coming back. King of the Hill did 13. My Three Sons did 12.
Okay.
The first five on ABC, the remainder on CBS. So My Three Sons, from 1960 to 1965 on ABC, and from 1965 to 1972 on ABC. On CBS, sorry.
And that was one where at least one or two of the peripheral characters or supporting characters were swapped out over time.
Yeah. Two and a Half Men, also at 12 years, all on CBS, and much more recently.
Uh-huh. Okay.
The Danny Thomas Show got 11 seasons. Cheers got 11 seasons. Frasier, 11 seasons. Married Children, 11. MASH, 11. The Big Bang Theory will be going for 12 next year. The Jeffersons got 11. Happy Days got 11. Murphy Brown got 10, will be coming back for 11. Roseanne got 9, came back for 10. Friends did 10.
Okay.
So, I mean, there's kind of a list.
Yeah. So 11 seems to be where it starts to top out, with a number going a little further than that, but not many.
And The Simpsons, the advantage, and I've said this since early on. I mean, I remember, to be fair, I can't even take it. My dad said this. I remember watching The Simpsons when it started, and I was in junior high school. And we watched, I don't know, I'd watched it. It was one of my favorite shows at the time. And I was watching it, and I remember my dad didn't really care for it, but I remember him saying, after 4 or 5 seasons, you know, by this point, I'm in high school, and I remember my dad saying, you know, the genius of this show is those kids don't age, which is what always kills sitcoms.
Yep. Well, and that's why I think animation is a different beast, because you can keep the characters not aging forever, as long as you can get people who can do the voices, even if you've got to replace some of the original ones or whatever. And I'm not saying they're better or worse shows, but it's a fundamentally different kind of a show than people who have to stand in front of a live audience and physically act as well as doing the voice acting.
Well, and again, what's interesting, that list we just talked about, most of them had children in them. Some of them did not. I think the fact they didn't have children helps. Cheers, Frasier, you know, did not have children.
Yeah.
The Jeffersons, Lionel, they had but it was an adult son basically from the beginning.
But that's different than Happy Days, where you've got the kids going through high school, graduating, and that kind of a thing.
But again, that was a very different show by the time it ended. You know, we went from Richie in high school to Richie not being on the show and Fonzie being a teacher, for Pete's sakes.
Yeah.
And I mean, by that point, the show was about Joni and Chachi, and Richie wasn't even on it anymore. So, yes, adults, the aging problem, obviously, is a problem for all of us. They can't go on forever. But kids obviously age faster. You know, someone who's 30 can play an adult for another 20 to 30 years. You know, someone playing a five-year-old, you know, can only play a five-year-old for another year or two.
Yeah, it's much more visible, the aging, for the younger.
And most successful family sitcoms have children. And, you know, so I do think that puts a cap on many of them. It's one of the things with the Big Bang Theory. There's no children.
Yeah.
They've just, I don't know if you watch the show.
Not currently. I did when it started.
They are having at least one of them is having children, but they haven't cast those parts. I mean, at this point, they're just babies and sounds from a monitor. Mm-hmm. And again, you can leave that going for a lot longer once you don't cast, you know, once you actually cast and have a recognizable child, it's different. And we talked about it, and it is continuing. The Modern Family, which I watched when it first started, and I caught an episode in syndication recently, is a very different show today than it was back when I watched it. Because those kids are a lot older.
Well, how about with young Sheldon? Because obviously young Sheldon is going to age.
Yes.
Do you think young Sheldon has any chance of lasting beyond however long The Big Bang Theory lasts?
Yes. I think it's a two-part question. It's got a cap of 4 to 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, can The Big Bang Theory go longer than that? Probably not. Possibly. If The Big Bang Theory ends and young Sheldon is still successful, you can replace the child actor with Jim Parsons as a college-age Sheldon.
That would be interesting.
And then Jim Parsons, rather than being just the narrator, would actually be playing his younger self again.
Yeah.
I think that's the only way to do it.
Basically, when the kid gets a little too old, Parsons takes over.
Which becomes, he can no longer, I don't think he could physically do both at the same time. So it would require the other one having ended.
Yeah, at which point they could just rename it Sheldon.
Yeah, exactly.
It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
But yeah, that is the one where I kind of go, there might be actually a way around that.
Yeah, I think there's, like you said, there's a way around just about everything. You just got to be a little creative sometimes.
And, you know, we've replaced child actors before. It's happened on various shows over the years a lot.
Again, just recently on Once Upon a Time, the kid actor for Henry was replaced with an adult actor.
Well, and two shows we've talked about quite a lot. The Big Bang Theory, the female lead, Kaylee Cuoco.
Mm-hmm.
Seemingly, there was a run there before that show where she was the child on every sitcom. And she was either replaced by or replaced someone else on almost all of those shows. There was about 12 sitcoms where she was the female daughter in that period. And in several cases, she was either replacing someone or getting replaced on those shows. And it's funny, we talked about Roseanne earlier. There's the famous Becky switch.
Yeah. When you've got one person who just can't continue for whatever reason and the show's doing well, yeah, you'll find a way around it.
Yeah. And again, not new. I go back to the earlier days of television, the Dick York, Dick Sargent switch.
Yeah, for Bewitched.
Darren, yeah. So yeah, it can be done.
Yeah.
Well, let's move on to CW, which I think has the most comic book stuff.
Absolutely. And this is probably the only network where the shows I'm watching are in the top half of the ratings, not the bottom half of the ratings.
Yes, and they are the top half. The CW shows on this network, for the most part, are the top half, and the CBS shows are the bottom half.
I mean, I'm watching Flash, Black Lightning, Supergirl, Legends of Tomorrow, and Arrow, which I don't think surprises anybody. I still intend to watch iZombie, I just haven't actually gotten around to it, and there's plenty of other things in the queue, so we'll see when that happens.
It's interesting. The first two seasons of iZombie, I think you will love.
Mm-hmm.
The third season could go either way. I don't think you'll be a particular fan of this current season, and I would assume that will hold true with future seasons.
That kind of makes sense, because the commercials I've seen of late did not appeal to me, so...
The first two seasons, and again, some of us were talking about this on the Slack channel, the first two seasons were clearly a young kind of neophyte investigator who happened to be a zombie.
Mm-hmm.
Very much in the Veronica Mars name. this season in particular is a we're living in the zombie apocalypse world and how you deal with it and contain it. This season is much more Walking Dead than Veronica Mars.
Yeah, that's not as much to my liking. Yeah.
And again, that's not a good, bad, or indifferent. It's just
they chose to go in a direction that I don't wish to go in. That's fine.
Yeah, and again, knowing you, but I think you really, really like the first two seasons.
It, like I said, it's on the list.
Yeah.
It's just, there are a lot of shows out.
Yeah. So, yeah, let's quickly, because we've been doing this with the other one. Well, let's talk comic book show.
Flash, it's doing really well for them. I'm enjoying it. I think it's funny, because I'm liking Flash and Arrow the best out of all their superhero shows, but in very different ways. And Flash is that happier, lighter tone, which is why I think it resonates more with a lot of people. And it's also a newer show than Arrow, so...
By one season, right? Or two? Two.
Two.
Do you think it is still a lighter, happier show?
You know, this season, most of the shows were not bright and happy, but it was at least a little bit more hopeful.
That's the thing. Did it get... Is it bright and happy, or did the others just go from depressing to super depressing? And you didn't, you know, now it's like, well, it's just the depressing one.
Well, like Supergirl, even the logo is dark and in shadow and depressing.
Now, Supergirl, I think I watched the first season and a half. It's on my list to catch up on. It's not. And they're still airing shows out of season. I'm not sure what's going on there.
It had a longer hiatus, and it seemed that they had four slots, essentially, for the DC shows. And it was kind of sharing one at times with either Legends of Tomorrow and or Black Lightning.
Again, it did get renewed, so there is that. That's the good news. Again, the fact that they're airing some of its episodes essentially after the normal season ends, not usually a great sign.
Yeah, I'm pleased that Black Lightning was kind of the second best rated show for them.
Did you watch it?
Yeah, I've watched it. We've recorded an episode.
It hasn't come out yet.
It has not come out. I have not edited it. To be honest, I listened to it just on my drive home because it's like, wow, that was kind of a short episode, but we covered pretty much what we had to cover. Some shows generate more discussion than others, yep. And this was a shorter season than the others.
It was 13 episodes. Not as short as I felt. I actually really enjoyed it. I had concerns after the first episode, which they held off for most of the season, but seemed to become more and more a problem towards the end. And again, it's not, you know, like I said, I like Black Lightning as a character. I didn't want to see this become a legacy show where it was him mentoring the younger versions, and it drifted more and more towards that as the season went on.
Yeah, but I see that as the team phenomenon.
Yeah, and
Team Arrow, Team Flash, Team Lightning. Yeah. I think it had a good cast. I think it had some good writing. I think there are some aspects they did very well. I'm hoping that they do some crossovers with some of the other shows, because there's some stuff I'd like to see there.
I can't figure out if it is in the same universe or not.
They had a reference to Supergirl and Vixen, which is odd, because those two are in different universes even within the Arrowverse.
Yes.
So they haven't established it either way. I'm of a mindset it should be on a separate world, just because the level of tech there just seems a bit different. Even though we get, you know, super science or whatever with the Flash, it's pretty isolated. Whereas what's available in Black Lightning to a surprising number of people is higher than I would expect. But we'll see what decision they make.
Well, plus that's the other thing. That organization that seems to be in charge of some of that tech, you would think could not exist unnoticed by some of those type organizations in the other universe.
Yeah. I think it works better on a parallel world than cohabitating with either Supergirl or Arrow and Flash and Legends.
Yeah. So yeah, Black Lightning, now it's interesting, we talk about Supergirl and getting shoved to the summer, et cetera, et cetera. Still the third highest rated. Supernatural, long-running other show on CBS, is actually third. Supergirl is the third of the comic book shows.
And then we've got also Riverdale, the Archie one. I'm not watching that, but it seems to be doing well for them.
Another show that got really dark.
And then we've got Legends of Tomorrow and Arrow. The other thing I do want to talk about in relationship with Flash, Supergirl, Legends, and Arrow is, again, they did do that crossover that seemed to do fairly well in the ratings for them. We talked about that with the mid-season type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of curious because that was kind of the mid-season pause, and then Supergirl had a fairly lengthy hiatus.
Well, you said they had to get Black Lightning in.
Either it was Black Lightning or Legends of Tomorrow. I forget which one it sort of took the time slot, you know.
Well, but they did both. Black they put all 13 episodes, they squeezed all 13 episodes of Black Lightning in, and Legends of Tomorrow, they squeezed the second half of the season in a shorter season.
I just don't remember what was in what time slot, and they seem to only have four for DC, and Black Lightning, Supergirl, and Legends of Tomorrow, those three shared two. And because I was looking at the overall kind of individual episode ratings, it didn't look like that hiatus really seemed to, the lengthy hiatus, hurt Supergirl at all, which is a little surprising to me because we let that one stockpile and watched the second half, and we just caught up on it recently. I really don't think it was the strongest season Supergirl has done so far, but it's also just mired in relationship melodrama. And maybe that's just not clicking with me as much as some of what they've done in the past.
Yeah, again, depends on their audience. CW, that tends to be their bread and butter, so maybe it's helping with their audience more.
Could be. I think the other thing where Supergirl struggles, at least in my mind, is having established Superman, having cast him this season, having seen him this season, and then he's not mentioned at times where I feel he should be. You know, there are certain events, it's like, this is a good time, even if it's just a text or an email from Clark or something,
yeah,
would have been good to put in there, and they didn't. And it's not his show, but it at times feels like it's just the female version of a Superman show, not her own show, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. No.
It feels derivative. It's odd because it's derivative of a show they're not airing.
And like you mentioned, Legends, kind of next on the list, a show that is seemingly gets retooled regularly.
Every season they change a few characters. And this is the proof in the pudding of what you were saying earlier. If you can always retool a show or whatever if you need to. This, I think they do it just because they want to, not because they need to. But next season, Constantine joins the Legends.
Yep.
I think that's going to be interesting, and I'm wondering if they bring in any other new characters. So if they bring in some new characters other than just him, I think that'll add some fun dynamics to the show. But it's a fun show, and I think the evolution from season to season, it's an evolution, not a reinventing of the show. The way they end one season's arc kind of sets up the next arc for the next season and so forth.
Yeah.
And I kind of like that.
Yeah, I'm a little behind on it, but yes, it's clearly changed. I am liking the lead more and more and more each season, though.
Mm-hmm.
The White Canary character.
Yeah, I'm just curious how long one or two of the other kind of original people are going to stay with the show.
Well, we've already lost a couple.
Yeah.
Her and Dominic Purcell are the only two really left.
Brandon Routh, who plays the Atom.
Yeah, and there was area. There was a point where he was almost missing.
Yeah, he's the one I would expect to leave next. I think he's the more replaceable of the bunch, but you know, we'll see.
And then they have clearly left open with some of the other things we've seen that you could bring Wentworth Miller back.
Yeah, they had him guest star a time or two this season. And did a fairly good job with him.
Yeah, and again, he popped up in Flash, and I think he was even on an episode of Arrow, too, and the crossover and everything. So. And then there's Arrow. I am going to be interested to see where they go with that, but to be fair, I've enjoyed it. They've done some very interesting things for several seasons. I think listening to your episode on this season was interesting, only because I share some of your, they have to deal with some of this, but I kind of hope they don't, or they deal with it quickly.
Yeah, it's one of those things that when you end a season on a particular story beat, you almost can't not deal with it the next season. Flashpoint with the Flash was one of those things. It's like, geez, they've got to deal with this at the beginning of the next season. So you've already got your first couple of steps for the next arc telegraphed or required to go in a certain direction. With Arrow, it's very clearly that way for the next season. But I think they'll have some interesting stuff. I don't think they would have gone down that route if they didn't have some interesting stuff planned. I trust the writing team. This show seems like it's going to go for about as long as Stephen Amell wants to do it, and he doesn't seem to be in any rush to leave, which I think is good. I'm curious how well the other shows do whenever Arrow goes off the air, because it's been the anchor of the universe. Not that another show couldn't take that over, but it changes the dynamic a little.
But as we have been discussing, it is the lowest rated of them. So for the anchor, that's an interesting dynamic.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because with Flash as the exception, it goes up as the shows get newer. Because if Flash was the second of the shows.
And it's the highest.
It's But that's why I was saying it's the exception. Yeah. But then you had Legends of Tomorrow, and then you had Supergirl, and then you had Black Lightning in the order they started. Legends and Supergirl were very close, but Supergirl, you could argue, even if it started a few days earlier, was on a different network and wasn't part of this universe until well after Legends.
That I agree with. But I don't think it was a few days. I think it was half a season. I think Supergirl started in the fall and Legends started in the winter of the same year.
I don't remember. You might be right. But they had teased the Legends well before that.
Yes. No, the Arrow and Flash crossover kind of ended with the Legends story. Yeah. And then there's iZombie again, a show that's been almost pushed to the summer. They got either all or almost all but one of their episodes into kind of the regular season. Something else to talk about with CW, they are adding Sunday programming. They're going from a 5-day-a-week to a 6-day-a-week network, so that gives them more hours to fill.
Do you think they're going to add another show or two, or is it just going to let them balance out what they've got better?
I think it protects some of the WB shows from the we can't cancel all the CBS shows. A show like Dynasty, I think it clearly just outright saved.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that that show is returning after one terrible season is almost mind-baffling. To be fair, I've been saying the same thing about Crazy Ex-Girlfriends and Jane the Virgin for several years. They're also both coming back. Life Sentences and Valor just didn't work and won't be back.
I'm just wondering if this opens up the possibility for yet another... I mean, obviously it'd be another DC show that I'd want, but you know what I mean? Are they going to try to get another show in there, or are they going to go in other directions?
At this point, it's almost... This is another interesting network, and I can't tell how much of their business is on this network and how much of it is simply a place to air shows for CBS and Warner Brothers production so they can later sell them in syndication, etc.
Interesting point. Yeah, I can see that.
Flash, Black Lightning, Supernatural, Riverdale, Supergirl are kind of the stars of this. All the rest of these shows, whether they're renewed or canceled, for the most part, is about their production company wanting to keep them going.
Mm-hmm.
And again, most of those are CBS productions.
Yeah.
Want to move on over to Fox?
Yeah.
Fox, again, we can talk about it here. Fox, in some ways, appeared to be a bloodbath. There's a lot fewer shows coming back than you would expect. Again, there's a whole day going away from football. They've signed the deal that not this year, coming year, but the season after. Not only will you lose a day to football, they will be losing another day to professional wrestling. Fox is kind of making a choice to steer away from kind of traditional scripted programming.
That kind of makes sense. I mean, it's a point of differentiation from the other networks, and if you've got other things that you think will do as well or better, and it's maybe easier or whatever, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, they've had a few shows that are clear successes like Empire and whatnot. They've had a few that clear not successes, but, you know, every network's got that. The three of these that I have been watching are The Orville, which I'll admit from the get-go, I wasn't sure if it had a premise that would last for more than, you know, a one-note comedy episode. But it won me over by the end. I think it's actually, in many respects, more Star Trek-ish than, say, Discovery. And I want to see its second season to see how they've retooled it and if they've kind of figured out what they're doing and what the audience wants them to be doing. And if they can get that show firing in all cylinders, and it had a good, if a little schizophrenic at times, first season, you know, is it Star Trek or is it a parody of Star Trek? It's trying to be both. That just confused me. But I think if they can get a lock on what it could be and should be, and I think they will. Man, I think it could be a really fun second season.
You know, I'm not a huge Star Trek. Basically, I really enjoyed The Next Generation. I really enjoyed the last couple of the original films and the Next Generation films, and I've enjoyed the new films. That's kind of my extent of Star Trek knowledge. The Orville, to me, is, after Next Generation, the best Star Trek show ever produced.
It managed, after the original series, Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, and Enterprise, which totaled to a bazillion seasons of Star Trek TV shows, plus they had the movies, to actually tell some Star Trek stories that Star Trek hadn't told.
Yes.
I was impressed by that.
Yeah, no, I really, really enjoy the show. It is, yeah, it'll be back. it had some interesting advantages that we can talk about with scheduling and things. It got two or three episodes aired after the season technically started, but before any other network, including its own network, Fox, aired any other new content. The season started basically with Labor Day weekend, so that all the NFL season was in the television season. Most networks did not start airing new shows until the third week of September. The one exception was the Orville, started, interestingly enough, on Sunday nights. And then it moved off of Sunday nights into what became its regular time slot once the Fox's regular Sunday shows and all the other networks' regular shows began airing. So it did have a bit of an advantage and it kind of started with zero competition.
Yeah.
But again, I really, really liked the show. I thought it was the best show out there. However, Fox's biggest success for a first season show was 9-1-1.
That had a pretty high-profile cast, did it not?
It did. Peter Krause is in it. Connie Britton's in it. I'm forgetting. There are some big names in that cast.
I haven't actually watched it, so I don't know, but I remember having seen like a commercial or whatever for it.
Angela Bassett's in it.
Yeah, it had some big-name people.
Jennifer Love Hewitt's in it.
Yeah, it had some star power thrown at it, and not just their big names. In some of them cases, they're really good people. So,
and to be fair, Jennifer Love Hewitt, while she's listed as a star of the show, actually won't start until next season.
Ah.
The two big hires for next season were her and Ryan Guzman.
Okay.
Who was in the Step Up movies and Everybody Wants Some. And he's a younger. He was in Heroes Reborn. Who's Carlos in Heroes Reborn, where you probably remember him from.
I actually have not yet watched Heroes Reborn. That's one of the many things on the list.
Okay, fair enough. He did a season of Pretty Little Liars. Anyways. But yeah, him and Jennifer Love Hewitt were the two big additions to that cast for the next season.
Okay.
It'll be interesting to see if there are people leaving, and I simply don't know the answer to that. But yeah, that's there. The Orville. The Resident also did surprisingly well. Another medical drama that debuted after the new year and did really well for Fox and will be returning. Back to the comic books, though, The Gifted, the X-Men show, again, did very well, only aired in the fall and was renewed. Did you watch that one?
I did. I enjoyed that. We did an episode on that. Yeah. I thought it was a lot of fun. Amy Acker finally took a role where she's not just crazy. I think it was a good career move for her. It was fun for them to use some of the lesser used X characters.
Yeah, no, it's weird. I enjoyed it. That being said, I believe there's 12 episodes. I want to say I watched the first 8 or so, and the person I was watching it with is an accountant, and it kind of got into tax season before we got caught up, and now it's kind of fallen off our radar. And so, yes, we need. I still need to watch the last 4 or 5 of those.
Definitely do that before the second season, because it was one of those that ended on a note that seemed to determine what may happen.
Yeah,
next season.
Absolutely. And again, it's just one of those. Yeah, it is what it is.
Yeah. And the next item on the list is another one that ended on one of those notes that was certainly going to impact what happens next season. But it was also a show that it was kind of unclear if it was going to get in next season, and that's Lethal Weapon. That was one where I thought the first season, I watched it thinking, okay, I'll give it a shot, was blown away, really enjoyed it, although surprised how abruptly that first season ended. That caught me unaware. Second season, I thought was good, was a lot of fun, but it, near the end of the season, got to where there was some serious behind-the-scenes drama going on that threw into question if the show was going to continue. And it's funny, because the more that I learn about some of the behind-the-scenes stuff, the more it really changes my opinion on a couple of the people involved. And not for the better, unfortunately. And it's one of those where, as we've talked about, how they could take characters you would think they can't write out. They've done that. They are replacing one of the leads on the show. And given what I've heard from the incredibly limited knowledge I've got on what's happened, I think they had no choice but to either recast or kill the show. And that is such a shame to get a show into that sort of position.
I agree. There seems to be, depending on who you talk to and who you ask, there's one of the two leads had to go. Whether or not it had to be the one that went seems to be questionable.
Yeah, it seemed like it got to a seriously dysfunctional set.
Yeah, whether two of them could not get along and one of them had to go.
And I think it almost, some level came down to whose show was it, either in their minds or other people's minds. It's, having seen a lot of casts at Comic-Con and other places, there are times you can get a sense, if these people seem to get along, I would say the cast of Firefly and Serenity is a good example of that. There are other casts where they're polite, they're civil, they are professional with each other, but they really don't seem to get along. And not that they specifically don't get along, but it's not that they do get along, I guess would be the subtlety there. And I would say the cast of Scorpion, when we saw them, my sister and I saw them at San Diego a year or two back, was that way. There was just a formality there that was a little off-putting. Whereas the Lethal Weapon stuff, man, I think if you had put the two stars in a room and left them alone for a while, a fight would break out, kind of a thing. And it's like, wow, that's a shame. Because I think this was one of the creatively, and from a viewer point of view, really breakout hits of late. And I think they were doing some really good writing. I think there was some excellent acting going on. And for that to happen under the what seemed like really bad behind-the-scenes situations is impressive. But I'm curious, how much does the chemistry of the show change for next season? Does the tone of the set improve? Does it not? Can it get through this transition phase gracefully or not?
Yep.
I think it's got a chance. But I think the new lead they bring in, there's a lot riding on that guy.
Yeah, and again, Sean William Scott has nothing to do with this. And, you know, some people like him, some people don't, whatever. It's certainly going to be interesting to see how it works.
Yeah, if he can play nice with the others and do a good job acting, he could be walking into a fairly good gig that could go for quite a number of years. If for some reason it just doesn't work out through no fault of him or anyone else's, that would be a shame.
Yeah.
But that was one where, you know, going from being on kind of a bubble show, because, well, it's kind of at the midpoint of where the network ratings are at for Fox, but for these other things to be looming in the background, when my sister and I recorded the episode on that, I knew when we were recording versus when it would air a few days later, it probably there would be some decisions made, and sure enough, there were. It was very interesting watching that finale. Uncertain if the show was going to continue or not.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah.
Again, there have been a couple of shows where the behind-the-scenes stuff is mattering a lot more than what we, the audience, seem to be thinking of the show or what we're watching.
And now one of the most interesting ones, back to us comic book fans, Lucifer, a third season show, was canceled, something that virtually never happens.
What do you attribute that to?
The fact that it was middle of the road in its ratings and was produced by Warner Brothers, not Fox.
Ah.
And again, with more shows than normal had to go because of the football deal, and like I said, Detroit. And again, shows are going to have to wrap up for other reasons. Lucifer being a Warner Brothers show, I'm hearing, I don't know how much credence I put in them, that Amazon is looking at it. Warner Brothers is unique in that they're one of the real juggernauts of television production,
mm-hmm.
but they're the one without their own network. Well, there's the CW, but that's one step.
It's half a network for them.
Yeah, it's one step away from a cable channel. So, because there's another show we're talking about, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, a comedy, which was produced by NBC, which did get axed after five seasons. And NBC instantly went, okay, no problem. We're just airing on our network.
Mm-hmm.
So again, Fox cut shows they weren't making, which, you know, again, makes sense. But again, a third season show like Lucifer, normally you would think, again, they'll get the deal done. And that's one of those where Warner Bros. Would do whatever they could and make it as cheaply as possible for Fox just to get those done for that fourth season. But they didn't. So, yeah.
That makes sense. Do you think it's going to be something where either through the DC streaming service or other things that Warner realizes that maybe they should have their own outlet for these things?
Well, arguably they do in the CW.
They've got an outlet there, but not one that they kind of control lock, stock, and barrel.
Yes. It's a complex answer. The simple answer is, would Warner Brothers love something like that? Yes. The truth is, there's not many that can produce the kind of revenue to produce the type of television they produce.
It's the kind of thing, if they had it, they'd use it, but it's not worth going and creating such a venue.
It might not be possible to create such a venue.
Fair point.
You know, like you said, oh, their own streaming service. Okay. CBS is a fraction of kind of, I don't want to say real, but we'll say for argument's sake, real streaming. CBS's streaming service is literally fractional compared with things like Hulu and Netflix and Amazon.
Absolutely, because it's a one studio streaming thing.
And Hulu is losing a ton of money, as we talked about in the kind of the mid-season episode.
Warner is starting up the DC Universe streaming service.
Yes, but if you look at the shows that they're talking about putting on it, those are not going to cost the kind of money a show like Lucifer, I don't think anyways, it will not cost the kind of money and have the type of production a major primetime drama currently has.
Don't know, because I haven't seen them, but again, Titans, Doom Patrol, that seems in the ballpark of potentially a Lucifer-type show, and admittedly, I haven't seen Lucifer either yet.
I actually really like Lucifer. It was arguably, in the household, between my wife, our friend who watches television with us, and myself, it was universally the one we all enjoyed the most.
Cool.
I'm sad. Again, it's a Jerry Bruckheimer production. That's not cheap. You're not just talking production values now. You're talking a major producer.
Yeah,
which is also
yeah.
Money.
There's some costs with that, yeah.
So again, whether or not you can afford, you know, say, oh, we can just create a streaming service is one thing. There's a cost associated with getting it up and customer acquisition and all that. Then there's the how profitable is it to fund that content.
Yeah. Well, and I think the only thing, or not the only thing, but one of the main things that makes something like CBS All Access even a thinkable project is they've got a fairly large library that's available through it.
Well,
and while I think Warner would have some of that, it's, again, you get to the point of if you're not, you're almost too late in the game at this point.
Well, Warner has a bigger library than CBS.
It does, but the fact that obviously there's Netflix, there's Hulu, there's Amazon, then you've got, you know, CBS All Access, MGM started their own one up. We've yet to get the DC one out there. So by that point, you know, you're not kind of first to market by a long shot.
Well, Disney keeps threatening to do their own, too.
Yeah. But Disney's one, even if they're late to the game, they're a big enough brand and growing that I think they could do it. And I'm not saying Warner couldn't. I'm just saying every day that elapses makes it a little bit more and more challenging.
I said this at the start of this process, and I think it still holds true. It just adds a different player into the game. The winner of the bidding war for Fox's production assets gets 30%. Of Hulu with that. If it is GE or Disney, that will give them controlling majority share.
Interesting. Okay.
My guess is that the Disney streaming service, or now possibly the Comcast Universal streaming service, Hulu becomes whoever gets the 60% share.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah. Disney has always talked about it. We're going to do it. And then there was like no kind of concrete when, how, and like, oh, we're going to buy Fox. I'm like, oh, they're going to get 60%. Now that they might not be who gets Fox, it could be Comcast that has that idea. So again, I kind of think whoever ends up with the majority share of Hulu, that becomes that studio streaming service.
Yeah. That's one of those, if you can buy a streaming service versus build a streaming service, there's a lot to be said for that.
Well, and again, Disney and Comcast each already own 30%.
Yeah.
Get Fox's 30% is the difference.
Mm-hmm.
The other comic book show to talk about, Gotham, was renewed, but for a shortened fifth and final season.
Okay.
A show that has dropped steadily in the ratings. You are way behind on that.
I think I'm still only about 5 episodes into the second season.
Yeah, I am halfway through this season. I really enjoy it. You know, I'm a Batman fan. You know, Batman's arguably the most popular comic book, still the most popular comic book character, both in comics and kind of in the world, you know, in the broader world in pop culture.
Yeah.
This show, and I fell into this show watches better as like a binging show, and I think that has hurt its ratings. The huge amount of money it gets from Netflix to be on Netflix, which is a deal they signed early on before the first episode aired, you know, there's a reason why Warner Brothers as a television, as a production company, would structure it that way.
Yeah.
But it is a really good show. I don't think it's a very good week-to-week, hour-long episodic drama, though.
Yeah, and there are some shows that you can follow on a week-to-week basis, others that if you try to do that, you just can't keep the thread of what's going on. And it's, if it's meant to be binged, you're better off binging it than trying to go week to week, and sometimes the same in the other direction.
Yeah, And Gotham is one of those shows that kind of feels that way. It almost has that cable show feel to it, where it would be better in, you know, 13 episode chunks. And again, that show had a huge hiatus in the middle of the year, so they basically aired it in a couple of, you know, 10 or 11 episode chunk seasons.
Mm-hmm.
So that doesn't help the week-to-week ratings either.
Yeah.
Also, Fox's inability to fill that time with anything that anybody was watching when it wasn't airing also didn't help. There's two shows on here that are listed as unknown fates. Or no, one. I'm sorry, Ghosted. Ghosted, only 9 episodes aired in season. 2 more episodes aired this previous Sunday as we record this,
mm-hmm.
which was the 10th. My gut reaction is that show has been canceled, but they're not going to release people from contracts so they can say the show was canceled until they're done selling ads for the remaining episodes they are airing here in the early summer.
Yeah, no sense having a lame duck show.
Exactly. But there was no sign of it, you know, at Fox's up front as, you know, it being a starring part of its next season. So
yeah, and that's usually not a good sign.
Exactly. Other shows, returning shows that are just chugging along. Empire, The Simpsons, Family Guy, all fine. Shows that were canceled in that we haven't discussed yet. Last Man on Earth, The Mick, L.A. to Vegas, New Girl were all canceled. No major surprises in there. Last Man on Earth probably... Oh, and The X-Files. Again, no major surprises in there. The X-Files, Last Man on Earth were the... Again, if it wasn't for kind of the shift in network goals, those two mm-hmm. might have survived. The Exorcist was a show I couldn't understand how it got a second season, and it won't be getting a third.
Okay. Not one I was going to watch anyway, so I'm all right with that.
Yeah, Friday Night Horror Show. Yeah, that didn't sound like something John would be into.
Nope. But there are other people out there who are, yeah, so sorry they're losing it, but not bothered by it myself.
And again, looking at those numbers, there weren't that many people losing it.
Yeah. Yeah. Shall we move on to NBC?
NBC, sure. Anything comic book related here? Not really.
No, but there's two shows I'm watching. Sure. If you go down to the bottom of the average ratings list, that's where they are. There's Timeless, which we agreed was lucky to get that second season. It lasted 10 episodes, I think. Ended on kind
of...
It got
11.
Oh, okay. I forget how many it had. I've watched them all. We've recorded on it. It ended on like a teaser cliffhanger thing that I know they're never going to resolve. I mean, maybe they will. I'd be happy if they do. But I'm not going to hold out hope for that.
That's a... And we talked about this last season. Sony Television is much like Warner Brothers, but with a much worse bench. It's a production company without a network and nowhere to put any of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Arguably, Timeless was an infomercial or bought time. The offer that NBC rejected on Timeless was insane, multiple millions of dollars per episode, meaning the one they took had to have been better.
Is it the kind of deal where this show could shift to, say, the Sci-Fi Channel or something?
Sure.
But probably not going to happen is what I'm sensing.
Yeah, Sony owns it. Sony can sell it to whoever wants to buy it.
Right.
Essentially, no one wanted to buy it, and they paid NBC to air it this season. I don't know how big a check they're going to have to write to keep it alive again on NBC. Yes, you could do that with Sci-Fi, and Sci-Fi would be more than happy to take a check like that. But the question then becomes is it even worth it for them to write that type of a check to a network that doesn't have the type of viewers NBC has?
That's fair.
So... Yeah, Timeless, again, nothing official, but based on kind of how things went previous season, who knows. What's the other one that you said is the bottom that you want to...
The other one I'm watching, and I haven't watched all the remaining episodes, is Taken.
Sure.
And man, this is one that this season is a clear continuation from last season, but a fundamentally different show. Yeah. They kept the two main leads, nobody else, and brought in two other actors to replace... the whole team of people they had last season.
Okay.
Massive cost cutting, changed locations, possibly filming locations too, but certainly sets. And it became almost just another generic kind of action show. Not that it was radically different than that last season, but it became more of that this season. It's funny because even so, it still felt more MacGyverish than MacGyver at times. This is one where I think they had a decent concept for a show. Somehow was able to leverage the Taken brand, even though, well, it's presumably a prequel-ish to the show. It's got really nothing to do with it for the movie. This was one that, given the radical changes they made this season, I was not really expecting it would make it to a third.
I remember. I know NBC is listed as the production company, but I'm not entirely sure that is. I'm trying to remember. It's filmed in Canada. I can't remember if this is legitimately a foreign production that NBC just kind of bought and aired almost as a summer show.
I would expect.
And so it may continue back in its home country if it has such, which could imply it could end up on a streaming service or cable later in the future, kind of in syndication.
That's sort of what happened with the Transporter TV show that I think aired a season somewhere and then aired another season like overseas that eventually was available.
Okay.
And that was not a bad show. And this isn't a horrible show. It's just it was such a retooling. I give the writers props for doing it within the continuity of the show and explaining the change. I thought that was well handled. But the fact that it was at the bottom of the ratings, not a surprise to me.
Champions in a similar boat that we were talking about with Ghosted. It's a comedy that's continuing to air. I would assume it's not coming back. But again, why say anything before you finish airing them? This Is Us, clearly the most successful drama on television, second highest rated show on television. Again, you take out the Super Bowl episode, third, behind The Big Bang Theory as well as Roseanne. But clearly NBC's biggest hit.
Mm-hmm.
Will and Grace for the season was the second highest rated show. However, that was a show that saw steep, steep declines week over week.
Now, just out of curiosity, you have this listed as season one, but for Roseanne, you had season 10.
Yes.
Will and Grace is a revival of the previous version of the show. Saying, why season one?
Why did I do that? Let me see.
I'm just curious. It doesn't matter.
I don't have a good answer for you. Yes, arguably this one could be season 9. I think it is in the press releases or the Nielsen data or, I don't make up these season numbers. They come from one of my data sources.
Okay, it's whatever they're using.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fair.
And my assumption is Will and Grace, for some reason, Nielsen listed as new and Roseanne it did not.
I'm curious which Murphy Brown, I would assume they would just use the old numbering or whatever.
Yeah, and I don't have a good answer for that. It's a weird precedent that I don't think we've ever seen kind of before.
The fact that we're seeing so many shows.
We'll have two more this coming season.
I was going to say, picking up where they left off we're seeing a surprising number of those.
Yeah, as you mentioned, Murphy Brown will be returning, as will, what is the name of that show? Tim Allen Show, Last Man Standing.
Interesting. Okay.
So yeah, there will be three of those shows airing, and we're also seeing a new Magnum PI, which will be just kind of like Hawaii Five-0, a new version, or MacGyver,
or SWAT, or a few others. Yeah.
Yeah. See, I don't even know enough about SWAT. Is it just happens to be about a SWAT team, or is it kind of a retake on the original '70s SWAT?
It's a retake on the 70s SWAT, same character names, different versions of the characters.
Gotcha. Okay, yeah. So yeah, like SWAT.
It's a reimagining, yeah.
Law & Order SVU, another one, coming back for its 20th season. Hard to imagine how that happens. But Dick Wolfman, when NBC, which is currently the number one network, and again, that has much more to do with football and The Voice and other things, but when they were struggling, Dick Wolf and the Law & Order shows kind of single-handedly kept that network alive. SVU's still there. On the other hand, he tried a true crimes version. First season focused on the Menendez brothers case. That did not do as well, so we would not have another Law & Order true crimes season.
Well, it's interesting, because SVU there, season 19, if you average all the other seasons, which includes the one for Will & Grace, for NBC, you get a 2.3 for an average season. So most of their shows are fairly junior,
yes,
with one or two exceptions like the Chicago shows.
And Chicago shows are fairly new. Fire's the old one. The rest of them are only last year or two.
Fair enough. But I mean, PD was going five years. But newish compared to the SVU, but old compared to, again, first season type stuff. It's just interesting how lopsided this one is.
The Good Place, you're not a comedy person and you're probably not into dark humor. For anyone listening who happens to just have a twisted sense of humor and enjoys a good laugh, that show's, I think, hilarious. And the cast is, Ted Danson's as good as he's been since Cheers. Mm-hmm. What's her name? Veronica Mars is delightful.
Kristen Bell. Yeah.
And her supporting cast, those two supporting, they're all really good.
Cool. So yeah, the Chicago shows, Med, PD, Fire seem to be doing all right. Justice, of course, didn't make it back for this season.
No.
Do you think they're going to spin more Chicago shows out?
Aren't they out?
I don't know.
They've done Fire, Police, Medical, and then they try Law, and it didn't come back this season, right?
Yeah, Justice was the one I was just talking about not coming back yet.
Yeah.
So,
you know, if they have an idea, sure. I'm not sure. Maybe try to clone it in a different. I don't watch those shows. I don't know enough about them, but it's possible. Good Girls, again, a spring show, but did pretty well and will return.
Mm-hmm. It's funny because a lot of these I'm just not even familiar with. Now, some of like the comedy ones, I kind of expect that because I don't really keep track of the
comedies. Let's see, Superstore's arguably their best comedy other than The Good Place. Uh-huh. And it had a full season. Good Place has been 2 10-episode seasons. The Blacklist been around for a while. It's hanging tough. Will continue to return.
Mm-hmm.
The Brave was the Anne Heche Black Ops show, as we kind of talked about earlier. The SEAL Team with David Boreanaz was the most successful. The Brave and Valor on NBC and CW didn't. Yeah, maybe there's only room for one Black Ops show. Who knows? Rise was a take essentially on Fame.
Okay.
Not returning. Great News was a Tina Fey sitcom, not returning. AP Bio, they showed multiple episodes a night and compressed 13 episodes into a few weeks late in the season again. It had terrible ratings, but it is returning. That's one I missed and I have no explanation for.
All right.
But it is coming back. I know Drew really liked it. I know he's mentioned the Slack channel a few times. I think Perseus as well, or Don. So there are fans of the show. Great for you guys. It's coming back. I don't watch it. Blind Spot is coming back again. That's a show, third season. I'm assuming it's coming back to get to 4 and probably will be done at that point. Timeless, Champions and Taken, we've already talked about. That's kind of NBC's scripted programming.
Yeah. It is interesting that, again, like I said, they've got a lot of young shows.
They were in a real dark period.
Yeah.
A number of years ago, they had 4 or 5 Law & Order shows and nothing else that anybody was watching.
Yeah.
And again, Superstore and The Good Place are kind of now anomalies for them in comedies. Since kind of the Friends era, Seinfeld Friends era, when NBC, you know, even before that, back to Cheers and stuff, and Frasier, NBC was the kind of the go-to place for like sitcoms.
Oh, yeah. They had a lock on it, it seemed like, for a while.
And then there was like a decade after that where they didn't have any that lasted more than a season or two. And even the ones that went 2 seasons were just hopes and prayers that somehow it would get better. And again, with shows like The Good Place and Superstore, they have turned that around a little.
Cool.
So, yeah, I did track special events this year. I don't see anything particularly interesting here. Everything's kind of down, the exception being the Super Bowl. But, you know, the Academy Awards, the Country Music Awards, the Grammy Awards, the American Music Awards, the World Series, all just kind of down.
Yeah.
Again, nothing shocking or surprising or alarming, just kind of, again, fitting that generic kind of 7-ish% drop that all television's experiencing.
Yeah, and again, there's so many things to be watching and other ways to be spending your time that you just got to expect that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and again, as the numbers tend to tell us, other ways to be spending your time, not happening as much as watching other things, you know, watching in other ways.
Yeah.
And remember, these are tracking. I track live plus same day. The reason I do that, again, is because they're most closely related to commercial ratings, which are 3 days, but they only count the people that watch the commercials. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's lots of ways to watch these programs, DVR, on demand, Netflix, et cetera, and not be part of these numbers, which always leads to the interesting, Nielsen's a broken system, you know. As someone I take heed from in this. It's always funny. He always says, I always find it funny that people that pay nothing complain about a broken system that seems to work perfectly well for the people that spend $700 million a year on advertising.
Yeah. It's working well enough for the advertisers to be happy. It's keeping enough of the shows afloat for that part to work. It may not be a perfect system, but no system's going to be.
Well, it's not even a matter of that. It is, you know, and this is one of those things Les Moon has talked about. He wants longer and longer periods to count for his rating, which I get as long as people are watching the ads. Whether or not advertisers, again, depending on the product, are willing to pay for someone to watch their ad in 6 months. Again, if you're selling cars or, you know, breakfast cereal, that may be perfectly acceptable, and that's as nice an impression as one today. On the other hand, if it's for a movie, yeah, you know, what good is an ad view months after it was out of the theaters?
Yeah, some ads don't age as well as others.
Yeah, exactly. So while the system may not produce what television fans want or be kind to shows television fans would like them to be kind to, they do a very good job of measuring what they are intended to measure, which is ad views.
Well, and again, for a number of the shows I watch, they tended to be in the bottom half of the ratings. And in some cases, matter of fact, like I think everything I was watching on ABC ended, except for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. That one continues. But it's
still at the bottom of the ratings.
Still at the bottom of the ratings, yeah. And, you know, I find that unfortunate. I like the shows I like to continue so I can keep watching them. But I'm not particularly offended or put out by the fact that they don't have the following I'd like them to have. It's just the way it is.
And again, it's not, and I think that's the misconception. It's not about following. Following is useful to the producers. Networks are still
profitability
and they're still in the advertising. And I'm in this position. You're in this position. I assume based on conversations we've had, you don't watch ads. And if you do, you don't necessarily watch them in a timely manner.
If I can avoid them, I do, because I'd rather not spend the 14 minutes an hour or whatever.
Yeah, it's a little over 14 minutes an hour now.
Yeah, I that allows, like, when my sister and I get together for an evening of television watching, that's another show we could watch.
Absolutely.
You know, sometimes another show or two. So, I mean, I get that it's, I don't say gaming the system or circumventing it or whatever, just skimming through those and blasting past them, but I have that option, I'm taking that option, and this is where I think between streaming services and other things that the technology and the business model needs to evolve over time. And it's certainly not going to happen overnight, and I don't even know how or what it should evolve to.
Well, and it is. It is. All the talk about how important it is to own the content and be the studio of production, that gets into the money that's made on the back end when those shows are sold to streaming services, when those shows are sold into syndication. You know, if I've got two shows that I can sell ads for that would do about the same, but one, I get the money when I sell it to Netflix, as opposed to someone else getting the money when they sell it to Netflix. Well, I make twice as much on the one. Well, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So that's why that is becoming so important.
Well, it's In software development, in Scrum and Agile and stuff, there's the concept of the chicken and the pig, you know, and it comes down to how involved in the process are you? You know, a chicken lays eggs, they're connected to the process. A pig, when he's given the bacon, he's got a lot more connection to that. Hmm. He's got a lot more at stake, if you will, pardon the cross metaphoric pun or whatever. But it's the same thing you're talking about. If you've got a show and you own a stake in its production and therefore all the revenue it's going to get, you're going to get a piece of, versus you just get a piece of the ad when it aired the first time or something. It's a fundamentally different equation. And I could definitely see where, like you were talking earlier, tracking which companies producing these things would be interesting for both how is it going to impact whether it survives on a particular network or not, of is it on the right network, or could it get picked up by another network like happened with NBC's picking up their own show that Fox had let go. Yeah, I definitely think that would be interesting to add to the charts you've got.
Yeah, and I'm having to make adjustments. I made some last year. I'm going to have to make more adjustments to my equations next year. Yeah, it is the business is changing. And again, even ad revenue, CBS, again, the company that's the only company that's truly in the television business.
Mm-hmm.
More and more of their revenue, general revenue, is coming from retransmission fees. You know, CBS, a lot of people pay for CBS, whether it's via cable, via live stream, whatever. The number of people that stick up an antenna and essentially get it for free is becoming a smaller and smaller number of people.
Yeah.
So now you get into where, okay, now it's not just about it. Now it is about having something that means people want to watch the network, because then that means people will only buy a cable company or streaming service or whatever, only get their service from a company that provides the network with the shows they're interested in. And so it's not only about ads anymore.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's also a little bit of a brand recognition or threshold amount thing. One of the things that sets CW apart is if you're into the DC shows, they've got most of them. You know, it's not a, I've got to go pick one over here, one over there. I mean, there's still, don't get me wrong, there's Gotham on Fox, there's Krypton over on Sci-Fi, there's other places to go dabble, but you can associate the Arrowverse universe with CW, and that gives them, I think, a branding edge, which is a double-edged sword, because if you're not into that stuff, you're probably less likely to watch CW. You know, it's interesting how they're positioning, the networks are positioning themselves and stuff like that. I think it's a bit of a changing time for television, particularly as more and more streaming services are coming online, and as the dynamic of the shows of some of them seem to last just barely the season versus the 20 years some of them are getting to or whatever. And there's the shrinking number of shows in that middle ground.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, I mean, I'm still finding tons of stuff to be watching.
Oh, absolutely.
Which I'm happy with. But I'd be okay if there's a slow TV season or two so I can catch up on some movies and stuff, too.
Yeah.
Or maybe my comics.
And literally, as we were recording this, I just got a press release that pertains to this, sort of. We were talking Star Trek Discovery.
Mm-hmm.
Alex Kurtzman will be taking over that show, which means the current showrunner essentially has been relieved of their duties.
Interesting. Have they started filming the second season?
Press release, Alex Kurtzman to take over for season two.
Okay.
So
I know they've cast a few roles, but I'm curious where they go with the show. To me, that airing or streaming at the same time the Orville airs is just mind-boggling at times.
Yeah, it looks like Gretchen J. Berg and Aaron Harberts were the showrunners, are being replaced by Mr. Kurtzman, who was a co-creator and executive producer.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
So, anything else on the ratings?
Nothing else on the ratings, no. I'm good.
This is good stuff. Thank you again for doing all the number crunching on this stuff. I find this, like I said, a lot of fun, and I appreciate you doing this stuff with me.
Certainly.
So with that, we will call it an episode.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.